Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Overlap Live Fan Debate brought to you by Skybet. After a humiliating 6-1 defeat, Tottenham had to get rid of their manager, Christian Stellini. Ryan Mason was on the touchline against United, and I talked to me. What did Tottenham need to do to get their managerial situation sorted?
I've been defending, obviously, Daniel Levy for quite a few years. I've actually said that he's one of the best operators in football.
Is that going to come up on the crimes against punditry?
No, because I actually think he obviously is running probably a large part of the club correctly, but he's never let go, really, has he, of the football side? Mm. He's never dealt with that. It's a little bit similar to, say, Ed Woodward at Manchester United, who was basically driving record revenues, record profits.
He's
on the business side.
Not a football guy.
But on the actual football side, they wanted to play football manager, or they wanted to be in charge of that side. So I think now, obviously, what's happened, I'm really surprised that they took that 10 days to lose Conte after that interview and then came up with Stellini.
Yeah.
I was like, you might as well stick with Conte to the end of the season. So he goes, I'll not speak to you, just get on with it, manage the club, because that's your job. Or bring in someone that would deal with it to the end of the season. Chelsea have had a similar problem with obviously bringing Frank in. I've seen it myself. I went in at Valencia to try and steady the ship for the last 4 months because you try. It doesn't work. Ranieri at Man United. There's a lot of examples now of where you think you can just put someone into the end of the season thinking that it'll just basically sail the ship to shore. And it's not working. In fact, it exacerbates the situation and makes it a lot worse. And it's looked terrible in the last few weeks. I think Ryan Mason, it's just probably because of his association with the club, and obviously the fact he's not a Conte man, really, has probably makes it better. And you saw a response from Spurs in the second half.
Have you ever been in a situation where a manager's got a number two's come in, and do they get from the dressing room? Do they get the same level of respect, especially if they're just implementing the same ideologies and school of thought as the previous gaffer?
Well, we had a number two for 6 months, managers. We had Phil Thompson come in on the back of Gerard Houllier's, he had a heart attack in the middle of a game. So we had Phil Thompson for probably half a season. It didn't really affect us. We kept going. We had a strong title chase at that stage up against Arsenal 2002. So it didn't change too much. And you're saying, oh, you're just doing the same thing. But I think in some ways that's what Tottenham have wanted to keep doing. And listen, Daniel Levy's made some really poor appointments of late, but I actually think on this one, I think it's more reading between the lines has come from the director of football who was in situ then, Paratici, who's almost probably said, Conte's press conference, you know, it's untenable maybe, you know, Daniel Levy's felt that, and he's probably said, well, hang on, we are fourth in the league. If we'd beat Southampton, we would have been third. So this guy knows how Conte works. We keep the same system. We do the same sort of things. This is probably the way to go. So I actually think Daniel Levy's probably looking at the situation thinking, I wish I'd have probably just done what I wanted to do myself, maybe bring someone else in new to the end of the season. Obviously, that's Ryan Mason right now. But I'm not trying to let Daniel Levy off the hook there, because you think of the appointments of even Jose, Conte, Nuno coming in. This is all on the back, I think, of when he put Jose in originally, him coming out with a statement saying, we want to get back to the values of Tottenham, how the game's played, being an attacking, you know, team or coach. And we always say that's like the Tottenham way, you know, oh, got to play great football. I always remember that when I was a kid. But right now, that's everybody's way.
Yeah.
That's everyone's way at the top level, how teams want to play. So to then go and appoint Nuno, then appoint Conte and find himself in a situation where with Stellini, it just didn't look right. When you're looking at him on the side of the pitch, when you're listening to him interviewed, we're in studios watching that and we're shaking our heads looking at it because we're putting ourselves back in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And thinking, what are the players thinking when you're watching him do an interview? What's he going to be like on the training pitch trying to get his message across? And it never felt right. So we don't know who's chosen that decision. But as I said, I think it probably had a bit to do with the director of football, and they've just got to try and get on to the end of the season. Now, are they going to bring someone else? Who can you bring in right now? They're obviously still trying to get a manager for next season, not right now.
Clive, who do you
on Stellini, though, you know, he wouldn't want to be there. Because the last thing he wants to do is look like he's being disloyal to Conte, who he's serving. So actually, they forced him to stay. He wouldn't want to be there. He wanted out. It was really badly handled, that sort of Conte situation. It was coming for months, a bit like Jose's situation at United. These situations don't just happen overnight. You can just simmer along. And I think that to deal with it in the way in which they did was really poor.
There was a period where Conte was away.
Yeah, yeah, we saw that.
And you saw the results. We saw us beat West Ham at home, Chelsea, Man City, the all-conquering Man City. We beat them at home under Stellini. So you could see there was some sort of logic in keeping him in place, but it was clear as soon as Conte was gone that it was all falling apart, not more so than Newcastle, where he decided to play a back four with two defenders and Porro and Perisic as fullbacks, which is... When I saw that, I was like, this is going to be a disaster, but if we concede less than three, we've done really well, and you saw us concede five in 20 minutes. So... Yeah, so there's that. But in terms of who I want, obviously I want Pochettino back because why is that funny?
Because he's going to Chelsea. That's why.
He's going to Chelsea.
Yeah, but you're asking
who would you want?
My question was who do I want? He's not a job. That's who I want. If he's going to Chelsea, then what's being rumoured and it's
you know, realistic.
Nagelsmann is realistic for Tottenham Hotspur.
Vincent Kompany's in the mix.
No,
I love Vincent Kompany. I love the way he conducts himself in interviews. He comes across as a leader, someone who would take responsibility if things are not going wrong. If things are going wrong,
you've had some of the best managers in world football, and you seem to just ruin their reputations every time. Yeah. So what? And I'm being serious. What manager actually thinks, okay, I could go in and actually do a really good job?
Yeah, probably a deluded one.
It's a tough job.
but the fact is, Tottenham are a massive draw to these managers. The fact that we're even in a position, I'm very much moving towards a place where Daniel Levy needs to step back or sell up. Not that that's going to happen, but. But what got us to this point is large parts of the great work he's done previously, right? Not where we are now, but what we've done previously. So that we can attract managers like Pochettino, like Jose Mourinho, Conte, and now Nagelsmann. Most of the people in this room don't want Mark Nagelsmann come to Tottenham. They don't understand that. They don't understand how a club like Spurs could attract one of the brightest managers in Europe. But it could happen, could well happen. So I mean, Nagelsmann and Rangnick as a director of football.
This talk about Tottenham's type of manager, and the manager you've mentioned, you've said they've ruined their reputation. But I was talking before about them not being the right fit in terms of maybe how they play football. But Tottenham have got to look at sort of probably Liverpool and Arsenal and how they've gone about challenging. Those teams have sort of been built through Klopp each year getting better. Arsenal under Arteta 4 or 5 years. Think of what Pochettino done. Jose Mourinho and Conte have to win right now. Tottenham are not a club who can win right now. It's got to be a building process and they get closer each year and they're improving. So when you talk about what type of manager they need, there's talk of, you know, Vincent Kompany, whether he could be that man. Who knows? He may go on to be a great manager. I think it's far too early for him in terms of talking like this. And the reason I say that, I look at sort of two managers who, sort of Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard, who are two of the best players we've seen in the Premier League era. Vincent Kompany's the same. There's almost this rush. And before we go any further, I know Guardiola goes against the grain. I get that. But there's almost like this rush to get these top players into these big jobs. I don't know if it'd be too early for Kompany for the Tottenham, but what's this rush? Let him build his CV, his experience, his ups and downs. It didn't go that well in Belgium. Fun, let's be honest. Burnley's been amazing. I just think for managers, there's no rush to get these big name footballers in at the top, because once it doesn't go well there, where'd you go from there? The building process for a young manager is to, you know, eventually be there competing year in, year out for trophies, the Champions League. I think we've just got to be careful with these top players being desperate, you know, as a media, as a fan base, to go, right, we want this manager in there. I think it'd be far too early for Vincent Kompany.
You say that, but then his first head coaching role, managerial role for Arteta, where he'd only ever been a number two to Pep. How important is that, the character of the player? Because you know some players, they look at and you go, he's going to be a manager. Or you listen to the kind of tactical nous that Arteta has and you listen to the players speak about this. He was always going to be a manager. He was always a student of the game.
Arteta would have got sacked at a lot of clubs.
Yeah.
Would have got at any other big six club, he would have got sacked.
Their own fans wanted him sacked. Yeah. So you probably wanted him sacked early on. But what's attractive about what Arteta's done at Arsenal from a Spurs perspective, is the fact that it's a project and it isn't Jose Mourinho and it isn't Conte. It's something that the club can build and move organically forward and become, hopefully, a more successful.
Will Daniel Levy, a more Spurs fan, give a potential manager who has to build the time that they need? Because
I hear this all the time, and I'm not having it. This thing about every manager should be given time. Let's not be naive about this. It's not happening for anyone. And you're only saying about Arteta could have lost his job. But what Arteta did in that first 6 months bought him time. He won big games. He won the FA Cup, not just by getting an easy run. He beat Chelsea in the final. He beat Man City in the semi-final. I think they beat Liverpool, that was the best Klopp team around that era. He won big games. He bought himself time with that FA Cup. So the season after, where it doesn't go well, he's got that in the bank behind it. So this idea that any manager should, he's got to be given 4 years, let him get on with the job, it's wrong.
You want to be seeing progress
true.
For sure.
You've got to see something. Yeah, you've got to buy into something.
It's the same with Pochettino. It wasn't an immediate success, but you could see, it was like when Arsenal lost to Man City, Rodri scored that goal late on, and Arsenal fans are singing from the rooftops, and the Spurs fans are like, "We lost, why are you singing?" But they saw what the future might hold and how they beat Manchester, how they lost, but performed valiantly and actually controlled a lot of the game. If you can see a direction and see a plan in place, then you're much more comfortable as a fan. Yeah. What we've had at Spurs for too long, and Daniel Levy is directly responsible for this, is a rudderless operation where it just feels like we don't know where we're going.
I'm amazed at Daniel Levy in his appointments of Jose, Nuno and Conte. I mean, maybe try it once, because I think you could say, OK, I've got a desperation, we've got the new stadium, we need to get into the Champions League, there's a financial need that we must have a manager who we know can deliver. But he'd seen what had happened with Jose at Manchester United. This wasn't going to be a shock to him. You know Conte's exactly the same. Nuno's football at Wolves, I think Nuno's a good coach, but I think ultimately you knew the football was not going to be a level up from Jose's football. I'm really surprised at his last three managerial appointments in terms of fit. Just all unlikely marriages that you just know are going to end up in tears and divorce. So from that point of view, I'm struggling to understand what's happened in the last 3 or 4 years. I can only think it's the desperation behind the scenes of the finances, the debt repayments, and maybe the big owner of, you know, Joe Louis saying you need to qualify for Champions League, because that financial drop between Champions League and Europa League is huge. And obviously Tottenham are not going to make it potentially this year.
I don't agree with that. I think that...
So why has he appointed those three coaches then?
Because
happened to Daniel Levy?
Daniel Levy's either going to pass the buck to Paratici for hiring Conte, but ultimately it is Daniel Levy's responsibility.
He can say no,
he's structured the debt so that it isn't as significant as people might think. The stadium repayments are manageable and it isn't going to be reliant on Champions League football. That's widely reported.
It will have a knock-on effect on your transfers and stuff.
Yeah, but you're talking like £20 million a season.
Just put a go-kart track under the stadium. We're talking about fireworks.
Well, it's a great point. Daniel Levy, what he's best at is that commercial aspect.
He's a great off-the-pitch operator.
And he should be allowed to do that.
What he's done with the stadium, the training ground, is incredible.
Do you think getting to the Champions League final, though, do you think he looked at that and thought that's the beginning rather than the end? Because in reality, that was the peak of that side. But if you get there, there's a little delusion that comes with it and goes, if we can just get a manager who's a bit more experienced, he'll be able to take that group of players and take them that one step further.
That was the idea with Jose. He just thought, can Poch or these players get over the line? Not necessarily the Champions League, but in a cup final. That team needed to win something, didn't they? And I think
we have to be real and say Spurs are a massively attractive football club. They attract Beyonce to perform. My mum's going, she's going to love it. Stadium's fantastic. On a sporting level, Pochettino needed 250 million quid spent after that Champions League final, and Spurs, as a footballing operation, a massive football club, didn't respect Pochettino, didn't respect the football aspect of the football club enough. It's an entertainment product, Spurs. That's the issue.
And they thought that they could just bring a winning manager in to get them over the line. But they actually forgot that Poch got them to the line.
You could understand the logic.
Mourinho ain't getting them there.
But doing it the second time with Conte, it's the second mistake, really. Yeah. It's Nuno and then Conte that I think... Jose, maybe he tried it once, but then United, to be fair...
You can understand
the logic. United, when everyone was clamouring for Conte, right, and they'd had Jose... The club held strong and said, no, we can't have that again because we know what's going to happen. Yeah. So to be fair, I can't believe Daniel Levy has gone down that route again.
Yeah, well, he's definitely that. I mean, it was a mistake.
But isn't it a bit though, where all of a sudden Conte's answering phone calls, and previously it was like Sherwood was answering phone calls, and they're like, oh, Conte wants to speak to me.
I think there is an element of that. So we can get Antonio Conte, who's won everywhere. Your point, we break managers, right? Really good ones. And that's what's happened previously. But there's no way of. When we got Jose Mourinho,
I was like, rephrase that. I think managers break you as well.
All right.
Because honestly, I think what I've said this about Rafa Benitez a couple of times. What Jose and Conte do, they turn everyone on each other,
absolutely,
and they end up breaking your culture, your club as well. So for me, don't just think there that we destroy managers. Those managers are capable in the power that they have with the media to destroy your club as well. I think Spurs is a great club. What Levy's done with the stadium and the training ground means that you're set up for a great manager to come in. Has Nagelsmann turned down Chelsea with the fact that would prefer to manage Tottenham? Has that happened? Because
no.
I think Chelsea went for Nagelsmann. No,
I don't think so.
They did.
Nagelsmann pulled out of the race because
he didn't want to be
manager mid-season, did he? I don't think he would have.
He got the vibes that it looked like
Pochettino. They made him come in three times, and he said, "You know what? I'm done. I've got Lewis."
I can't see him saying, "You know what? I'd rather go to Spurs."
Don't think that's what happened. Skateboard ramp.
Well, I mean, why not?
Why not?
Look at the state of your football.
No, I know we're a state, and we'll get into that in a minute. We're not talking about us yet. Just let me breathe.
Well, that's probably a good time to go.
There's obviously massive dissent at the moment around, obviously, Enoch and Daniel Levy.
Yes, there is.
So, in terms of that, is it a case of now it's an absolute majority of the football club want the ownership to change?
So, on my podcast, The Fighting Cock, we put a poll out, right? We got a sizable response on it, and it was one in four wanted Enoch or Daniel Levy, they're two different things, but to be removed. One in four wanted him to stay. Sorry.
Oh, okay, so it's 75% wanted him out.
On Twitter, which isn't absolutely representative of matchday going fans. So yesterday you heard them singing, Daniel Levy, get out of my club. It probably was, I don't know, it sounded like maybe half the stadium. It was difficult to tell, but it's so much more significant than it was a year ago. And there are movements. It's very sporadic, and there needs to be a bit of a more organisation online about how the pressure is put on the club. But there are movements springing up around social media that are trying to force this thing.
I mean, Gary will teach you how to lead one. I mean, that's probably...
someone's got to come up with £5 billion, though, so that's the key.
How long has he been there?
20 years.
So did you say £5 billion?
Apparently, he's valuing what he would want from the club. That's not their market value. I understand that.
£5 billion
is
that's Chelsea money, which brings us on nicely to. Flav, I would love to speak about this all day. It's one of my favourite subjects.
Brilliant.
To talk about his post-capitulation. We actually have to go. Second favourite subject, which is Chelsea.
Don't be too horrible to me.
But we're going to talk managers, because you both know the manager very, very well. Pochettino, right man for the job, yes or no?
I would say yes. I don't think there's any other option. I think he did well at Spurs. I think he's probably been your most successful manager.
In our history or the last 10 years? Or?
Well, I think you just sacked him early, in my opinion. But I don't think there's anybody else. But our problems go way beyond what manager we are or we're not going to have. I mean, Todd came in. I appreciate the fact that he's present, that he's making an effort, that he's willing to spend the money. I get all that. But I don't think there's any difference between an owner that wants to spend money and doesn't know how to spend it, and one that doesn't want to spend any money. I don't really see the difference there. I think his ambition has turned more into arrogance, in my opinion. I think he came in, he made himself interim managing director or one of the directors. He doesn't know anything about English football. He's inexperienced, he's uneducated on it. Especially the Premier League, it's so competitive. You know, you can't really afford to have yourself making these poor decisions. We had 11 first-team injuries at one point. He sacked the medical staff. You know, I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's, again, another poor decision he made. Sacking Tuchel for Potter, whether you think Tuchel was the right manager or not, isn't really relevant. He gave Potter a five-year contract, who has no experience in managing a top-four side. And then aside from that, we've got players on the pitch that are underperforming due to lack of confidence, lack of motivation, poorly coached, I also believe that's the case. And then we spend £500 million and we don't buy any prolific strikers. So what have I missed?
I
made my notes for this show.
Gary,
I was like, what have I missed?
Joseph, I agree, it's been an absolute mess. It's been a shambles from day one.
It's just erratic.
The first overlap of the season, I said he's like Football Manager. I called him Todd Woodward because it just reminded me of
I know, when... I can apologise to you now for that because I didn't want to judge him before he had a full season and I've seen what he's done now and it's... But
the signs were there, weren't they? You know, announcing that he was sporting director, doing what Ed did, to be fair, 10 years ago when he came off that tour. I think it was Australia or America where he said he was going to go back and sign Bale and... Bale and someone else, Fabregas. You just don't announce things like that. So it's been a mess from day one. Obviously, there's stories around him appearing in the dressing room after games, which obviously Tuchel didn't like. Obviously, Potter doesn't like. No manager likes
that. Would you have liked that as a player, though?
I believe it or not, you know, at Manchester United for 20 years I played there, the owners of the club, not the owners, the executive, the board of the club come into the dressing room after every game.
Really? Okay.
Every game. When Sir Alex was there, he invited them in. It was always after the team talk. It was always to shake Sir Alex's hand and the players' hand, say well done or commiserations, the odd time we lost a game. And basically that happened for 20 years. So it's part of actually what we understood. They never once commented on performance. They never once addressed the players. They never once spoke about anything to do with tactics. It was just purely to keep the club together from top to bottom.
Yeah.
That's what happened at the club. So it's not unusual that an owner goes into a dressing room or an executive goes into... I think Sam Hammond used to do it at Wimbledon all those years ago, if you remember. So it's not unusual. But if he's contributing to the chat in the dressing room and talking and overstepping the mark, it's a massive problem.
Yeah.
So I think... What I would say is that, it's been a mess. But the game against Liverpool a few weeks ago, I think, did you do the game with me?
Yeah.
And Chelsea played that game, and I thought there was something in that game that you saw in a collection of players that you thought, if they could be brought together by a talented coach, and Pochettino, I think, is a really talented coach.
Yeah.
I think that Chelsea next year could really surprise us just through Pochettino bringing the club together, because he will, because he's likeable, and the players will respect him enormously.
Yeah.
He's played, worked at PSG, worked with big players, worked at Tottenham, worked at Southampton, done a great job. I think he'll do a very, very good job next season, and he'll cover a lot of the stuff that's going up on behind the scenes, is my prediction. If you get him, I think you'll have a very good season next year, because those players are perfect for Pochettino. Talented young, but just need direction.
Yeah, I think
I wanted Pochettino at United. That's not to say that I didn't want Erik ten Hag. I think they were so close in terms of whether we got Pochettino or ten Hag. I'm happy we've got ten Hag. I think he's done brilliantly well, amazing. But Pochettino is a top coach that I would have been happy having at my club.
Yeah, Cara, Carol. Yeah,
Cara, would you agree that Pochettino is the right man for Chelsea? And can he deal with the back room? Like, you know, can he deal with what's going on and the noise?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's been at Tottenham. He's dealt with Daniel Levy, who's an owner.
Poorer version of
Tottenham. No, but what I mean is he's someone who probably we think does get involved in, you know, transfers and deals like that. He's been to PSG. I'm sure you've got a manager up there as well, some of the biggest players in world football. It's still... The idea behind Potter was, OK, I'm the new owner, I'm going to be different to Abramovich. I'm going to give this guy a five-year deal. We're going to play a certain style of football. We're going to do things a little bit differently. No, I'm not talking about the player, I'm talking about the manager. And Poch is not a serial winner like Chelsea have had in the past. You know, where you think, right, we're going to get Ancelotti, we're going to get Jose, we're going to get Jose back, we're going to get Conte, they're going to do a job for 2 years. I still think this is the idea of, we do want a manager for sort of 3, 4, 5 years, and the hope and Pochettino can be that man. Whether he is that man to actually win them something big, because that's what Chelsea fans are used to. This idea that Chelsea are going to be different now under the new owner, it doesn't matter what the owner says. Those fans are used to having a winning culture, a winning manager. They don't fall in love with the manager because they knew they don't want the new ones coming in a year or two's time. So there was no way Potter was going to last that. So this idea that Pochettino will get 3, 4 years, he'll have to do something really special in the first couple of years, and you're going up against Klopp, Pep. Obviously, Arteta's been in the job longer at Arsenal, knows the club. So it won't be easy, but this is I'm a massive admirer of Pochettino, but I do think it's a real big test for him, because this is the one where he can't fall back on that. It's Tottenham, we don't normally win, we don't have the finances of the other teams. I don't think as a Chelsea manager you can fall back on that.
Can I ask you a question, Kai? Because I asked it on Twitter a few weeks ago. If you were Chelsea, the Chelsea group of players, the United group of players, currently in the Liverpool group of players, and all things equal, Chelsea get a fantastic manager next season. Which group? Obviously, all clubs need to make additions. Chelsea needs a striker. United needs a striker. Obviously, Liverpool need players as well. Which group of players do you think a manager would want to inherit, if all things were equal, to add to start next season? I think Chelsea's group of players. You know, honestly, I think Klopp or Ten Hag might look at Chelsea's group of players and think, a lot of them I like.
I mean, we've got amazing players. I mean, Modric, in my opinion, his first game, I think he came on for like 10 minutes at the
that
end.
That cameo against Liverpool was
against Liverpool Anfield, and he was brilliant. And I haven't really seen that from him since then. And I think that's because he's poorly coached. I think they've all got lack of confidence now. Yeah. And also, Todd keeps talking about this, you know, big project. But we didn't really, we already were quite good. We're not Wrexham at the bottom of the, you know, we're not in the National League. It's a completely different ball game. And I think he almost was trying to fix something that wasn't really broken. We just needed a few additions. I'm pretty sure Tuchel even said, you know, I need a few extra players here and there. Why are we sacking board members and medical staff and all these people that have been there for years who were running the club, you know, pretty well? I mean, you can tell that by the amount of trophies we had.
Liverpool and City, we've said it on the air, for the last sort of 3 or 4 years, haven't just been the two best teams in the league, probably the two best teams in Europe, the points totals they were getting. But Chelsea were comfortably third. It wasn't even like a fight with sort of Arsenal or Manchester United, really. Yous were definitely the next
challenge. And we were winning trophies in between that time as well.
Liverpool last season, two cup finals, had to go to penalties. So that shows how good Chelsea were. No, I don't agree with what you said.
I didn't agree. I didn't say an answer. Which team of players, which group of players?
Oh, sorry.
Which group of players? I didn't give you an answer.
You just go base level, I don't agree with.
Which group of players do you think you would like to take on next season and add to out of the current Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea crop?
Yeah, I mean, the money they spend, they're going to have top players there, but I think there's top players at all those clubs, and I think it could be, you know, one would say another.
Who do you think is the best squad out of those three that you'd like to take?
Well, Chelsea's got 30 players. How could it not be the best squad? You've got to make some sort of squad there.
Without any strikers.
No, the biggest thing about it, there'll be no togetherness there at all. How are they losing the games they're losing right now? There's no team feeling, there's no togetherness.
With a new manager coming in to sort it out.
But also, I think it'd take a lot of sorting out to create, basically. Klopp's created, no, to create what Ten Hag's created in this first season, where there's a connection with the supporters, there's a togetherness with players.
Klopp can do that, though.
Yeah, he can do that.
I think Pochettino will make Chelsea very competitive in that top four.
Should do.
Would you rather, as a player, say if you're struggling, say you're in that Chelsea squad, and you've just lost five in a row, would you rather, regardless of the connection with Frank Lampard, you'd rather like a Pochettino if you could get him in now to the end of the season and just before you come in for pre-season, you've got no idea what's going on.
Even when Chelsea were successful, they always chucked a manager under the bus. Those players culturally over 20 years have been happy to not to say, just down tools. They've always down tools at the end of a managerial, always. It's terrible what's happened there. They've had some great success, but when they've had enough of a manager, those players, they get them out, and that's still there in the club because they're not even doing anything for Frank. They weren't doing anything for Potter at the end. They are taking the piss, basically.
I think Mourinho's second spell, once he went, because the fans were all thinking, oh, he's going to be there long term. Once he went, we sort of lost the idea of having a long term manager. So I don't think it really bothers fans so much.
Have you ever had a long term manager? Yeah. Sorry.
Well, I mean, no.
Mourinho.
That was what people were saying. Yeah, we need longevity, like X, Y, Z. But it never happened.
I don't think we do. I think that's real rare now.
It's not rare.
Tony Klopp and Pep.
No, the successful clubs still have managers for 4, 5, 6 years. Arsenal, Liverpool and City.
But that's not what we're used to winning stuff.
They've had managers for a long time. So, honestly, I was told this a few years ago. Oh, you can never have a Sir Alex Ferguson anymore. I get that, 20-odd years. But when you've got a successful manager with a successful group, you can have them for 4, 5, 6 years.
I think it was 20 years unimpeded. He earns contracts along the way, doesn't he? It's not like he got a 20-year contract and then ran away with it.
If you're going to compete for the league, because Chelsea, as a matter of fact, since the last time they won it was like 2016... They've not been nowhere near winning the league, despite all the money they've spent. I know they've won cups, but
Champions League, surely you
won Champions League, but you've been nowhere near.
Your cup team.
You're nowhere near winning the league. Nowhere near. It's just, even to say,
what are you talking about?
Even
to
say, no, but I'm saying, Gary's saying comfortably in third. The amount of money you spent, comfortably in third. Chelsea's supposed to be competing with City
European
for the league.
Trophies.
You spend more money.
A year turns it around in a year with 30 players.
Yeah. Chelsea need about three.
Massive improvement next year, Chelsea. He'll turn it around straight away. Straight away, I'm Chelsea top four next season with Pochettino looking after those players with a striker.
Liverpool back. Newcastle and City. Liverpool will be back next season, definitely.
We're going to get on to that, but we've got to move it on to a team that is pushing for top four. Manchester United, are they going to do it?
Pushing.
They're in the top
four. Cemented almost.
Ish.
Yeah, you're right, ish.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Deadline for the third round of bids to take over the club is today. Gary, I know this is a topic that is close to your heart. It causes you a lot of stress. Can you see the club being sold outright? Because you keep getting those drip feeds of information that's saying maybe they're going to sell a percentage.
Nothing's changed. I think there isn't a United fan that just basically wants to see the current ownership change. There isn't a United fan that I speak to now anywhere that doesn't think it's the right thing for them to move on. They have to move on. They have to leave the club. You know, you look at the stadium, not getting the... That was not the final straw. The final straw had gone probably many years ago, but the actual... To not be one of the best 10 stadiums in the UK and Ireland to be part of a bid to go for Old Trafford, they inherited the best stadium in the country,
yeah,
inherited the best training ground in the country that had just been built and the best football team in the country. We were the best in all classes when they inherited the club. We're now, in all those three categories, nowhere near the top in the country. So they have overseen the demise, and they have basically, were shielded by Sir Alex Ferguson. We didn't know it at the time. Some maybe did, but I didn't know it. They were shielded by Sir Alex Ferguson for the first 10 years, and then basically now the true colours have come out. I'm not going to bring Liverpool into it. I think Jurgen Klopp is shielding the owners there because I don't think they're too different than Glazers. And I've said that for quite a few years. I think that Klopp is shielding the FSG in the same way that the Glazers have been shielded by Sir Alex. I think I'm right on it, Jamie.
FSG taking money out of Liverpool?
No, but I think generally...
That's the biggest problem with Manchester United. The owners of Man United, they're taking money.
It's part of the big problem.
I think it's probably the biggest one, constantly.
Optically, it looks terrible taking money out of the club, but they only take out 20 million a year of revenue, which is essentially, to be fair, like a football player, like a fullback. It's optically terrible.
Not Danny Simpson.
It's optically terrible, but it's only 20 million a year, to be fair. If they were successful and they were actually people who invested in the stadium and the training ground and had a successful football operation, no one would actually... When Manchester United...
Look at Liverpool's stadium, look at Liverpool's training ground.
Jamie, when Manchester United were a PLC, they paid out dividends that were equal to what the Glazers have taken out. So it's not unusual for the owners of Manchester United to take money out. Martin Edwards will have taken money out. So the problem is, you can't take money out but not invest in the stadium.
Liverpool's owners have invested in the stadium. They've got one of the best training grounds.
You've written an article a few weeks
ago. I haven't. You didn't even read the article. Scott Melvin probably sent you it.
You've written the article a few weeks ago after saying to me earlier on the season that there's no problem with FSG at Liverpool. Right, they are not able to invest at the levels that are needed to make Liverpool as successful as you would like them to be. So my point is, Bellingham obviously now has gone off the table because of finance. He's not an option anymore, even though he may want to come to Liverpool. Was the theme of your article, and you were disappointed in FSG because of that?
I was disappointed in Klopp. Liverpool last season.
He's not paying 100 million.
So Liverpool last season, don't talk like you know more about what's going on at Liverpool. Liverpool last season did not buy a midfield player because as a fan base, we were all as if like, we're waiting for Bellingham. It wasn't said publicly, but we know, being in Liverpool circles, we're not going to buy that, we're going to wait for the right one. So Liverpool almost, don't throw this season away, but the short in midfield, yeah, and we accept that as a Liverpool fan base because we've seen it before. They did it with Van Dijk, they did it with Alisson. So Karius is not good enough. The centre-backs are not good enough. But Liverpool wait for the right man. They wait for the one. OK, we all know that one was supposed to be Bellingham. So the reason Bellingham, then you say, three quarters down the season, we're not going to go for Bellingham. And it's not just because of his finance. If Jurgen Klopp wants to sign Jude Bellingham, he can sign Jude Bellingham if Jude Bellingham wants to come. Nah. But the money, what are you shaking your head for?
Without Champions League football.
You haven't got the money.
No, we're talking about money.
You haven't got the money.
Yeah, yeah. You might even be here next season.
you haven't got the money.
No. The problem, though, no, listen to me.
I'm not having a go at them.
No, let me finish speaking. So, Liverpool, right, will spend. How much will Jude Bellingham cost?
140.
Okay, not a problem. Will Liverpool spend more than that in the summer?
Yeah.
Yes. So, Liverpool have got the money for that. The problem Liverpool have got is they've now got more problems in the team. So Jürgen Klopp saying, we can't afford that because I actually need four players. Rather than last summer when everyone was thinking, Liverpool just need that one midfield player. So they go for Tuchel, he goes to Real Madrid. And then they don't get him. They don't go and buy a midfield because we're waiting for Bellingham. Then this season happens and you're thinking, oh, this is a bigger rebuild than actually just going to buy a midfield player. So Liverpool will probably spend, I would say, over 200 million this summer. Do you agree, yeah?
Yeah, I agree.
I think they will. But they'll buy three midfield players. They probably buy another defender. So that's why Liverpool have pulled out of that now. Not because of the actual... Because they can't afford Bellingham
the
three players.
This is the same language that Sir Alex was using for years, to be fair, to say there's no value in the market. Right. This is exactly the same pattern, Karras, trust me. Klopp is protecting the owners, and Sir Alex's genius of able to actually compile a squad together basically off low spend relatively to the other clubs like Chelsea and City at the time when they started spending, right, is he's shielding the owners and he's basically protecting them from what's eventually going to come. And I think the patterns at United with the Glazer family are that ultimately they have to leave because they failed in all three of the major sporting and non-sporting objectives.
Which FSG haven't failed in.
So my point is, once Liverpool start to fail on the sporting objective, if Jurgen Klopp doesn't get the money or he leaves in the next year or two or whatever, you'll start to see it unfold there in the same way as it has done with the Glazers at United. Because Liverpool's fan base, equally as passionate, love their club, don't want to see Liverpool at the very top. They won't accept them being sixth and seventh now after what they've seen in the last few years. They had that for 30 years. They accepted it patiently then. Manchester United's fan base are not going to accept having the worst stadium and the worst worst stadium in the top six probably, and the worst stadium in the top worst training ground in the top six, and be, to be fair, fifth and fourth in the league. We're not going to accept that. We can accept being fifth in the league as a Manchester United fans if we've got the best stadium, the best training ground, and we're still setting standards. We're not. We've fallen below in every single level. So they do need to leave and they need to get on with it, because the new owners, whoever comes in out of the two, and apparently it's very close from what I hear, is that it's close between the two who's going to get it, they need to think about the transfer window and picking up the pieces of what's going to happen in June, July this year. So it needs to happen in the next few weeks.
We'll touch on Liverpool in just a bit, but I want to know from Adam, what do you think is going to happen today when it comes to that? If you're hearing it's close.
What do you mean, what do I think is going to happen today?
In terms of the bidding, the deadline.
I'm hoping we get a few bids in. I'm not liking what I hear about Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos trying to keep the Glazers in there. The guy professes to be a Man United fan, but he wants to cut a deal which will keep the Glazers in there. Pull the other one. It doesn't sound like a Man United fan to me. There's more protests on Sunday. People say Manchester United fans don't protest the Glazers when we're winning and stuff like that. We've been doing it for years and it's continuing, and there's protests on Sunday at the game as well to obviously reinforce the message that the fans don't want the Glazers to remain. So fingers crossed. Obviously, I have my issues with state ownership and things like that, but ultimately, to see the back of the Glazers and it not be a deal that keeps them in a minority is ultimately what we want. And if we get that, then Ten Hag can start to look to the future. But like Gary just mentioned, like delaying it with these second rounds of bids, third rounds of bids, are we going to stay, are we going to go? It's affecting the football team, and it kind of emphasises again, these guys have never cared about Manchester United's football team. They've never cared about how we function on the pitch. While Fergie was there, we won stuff still, in spite of their ownership. And now they're there and they have to make their own plans and they have to bring people in. It's like what we saw with Ed Woodward. It's just, you can spend as much money as you want, but if you're not spending it in the right places and you've not got the right people investing, then ultimately it's going to be wasted, which is what we've seen. So we need to get back on track. We need to have the right people spending the money. And we've got the right manager as well now. Like, finally, we've got a manager that is bringing us forward, getting us competing. So if we fail to back him in the summer, it's going to be a huge mistake by United. And it'll be the last slap in the face from the Glazers, just like waiting around and dragging their feet. Hopefully they do one ASAP.
If Ratcliffe is willing to allow the Glazers to remain 20% involved, I know you don't want it, but doesn't that almost guarantee that he's going to get the preferred bidder?
I don't know. I've been, because I remember Gary said, was on the last overlap, you were like, I think they might stay. And you were pretty concerned about that. And I was kind of, I don't think they'll stay. Will they go this far without...
Thomas Zilikas goes, I'm not putting myself up for a third round of bidding because the process is fast.
That geezer was a fraud, bro. That guy who said that the fans need to put in money and stuff. Nah, he was having an absolute laugh. It's as likely as that I buy them. Or Gary.
So just on that, the thinking all the way through is that two of the Glazer family want to stay in, Joel and Avi, and the other four want to sell. So you're talking, they only own 69% of the club, 70% of the club, just to round it up. So what you're talking about is basically the two brothers that would stay in would basically own 20%. The New York Stock Exchange would own 30%. And then, obviously, if Jim Ratcliffe was buying all the American fund idea, Elliot, they would buy that 50% to get the other brothers and sister out. So that's the idea. Now, I think, to be fair, if Jim was to come in at 50%, Jim Ratcliffe, he would probably, because it's become so expensive, he probably can't afford the 70% at day one. So I suspect what he'd have to do is come in, get control of the club, and then take them out within a year or two to make sure that obviously they exit. Because you're absolutely right. They cannot stay in with any control or any power over the football club. They have to exit as quickly as possible. So I suspect he's probably looking at a two-step type position because of the value of the club is at like 6 billion. So he might not be able to afford to get the 70%, which would be 4.2 billion. Oh, 70% of 6 billion. 4.2, is it?
Yeah.
4.2, but whatever it is. So he's probably paying 3 initially, which he can maybe afford, and then he'll give the other money, whatever it is, after. So it's complicated.
Isn't that a concern if someone, and I know I don't really understand big finances and all that kind of billionaire stuff, but isn't it a concern if someone's coming in and they haven't got enough to actually get rid of the owners, then they're going to be sitting around dragging their feet? We could just be left in limbo for like 5, 10, how do you know how long it's going to last? And it seems... there's something not quite right about him. He professes he's a fan, but he owns a season ticket at Chelsea and all that. He's just...
Adam, one thing I would say is, though, if he's putting £3 billion down and he owns 50%, he isn't going to let the Glazers call the shots. He's not. He's a big businessman who basically has F1 teams. He has all these... he's not going to come in and just let them call the shots. No one's going to do that. So it's not...
desperation to get the club might force him to do that temporarily, and that's not what we want.
But just going, obviously, we've talked about United enough. Just on Liverpool, and it's a yes or no. Are you both comfortable that you're happy to keep FSG in place for the next 5-10 years?
No. So what you've got with FSG, I accept, and I think Liverpool supporters accept, we haven't got the money of Man City, we haven't got the money of Chelsea, Manchester United. But what we've got is people who know what they're doing. So you can talk about, look what Chelsea have done this season. Loads of money, I haven't got a clue what they're doing. Yeah. So in an ideal world, I would love an owner who had loads of money, but I'd still want what they're doing in terms of decision-making expertise. The idea of every owner is not spending loads of money, it's making right decisions. And when you need to spend big money, doing it. So 75 million on Virgil van Dijk, Alisson the goalkeeper. When the piece you're talking about in terms of me being critical, I was as critical of Jürgen Klopp and his staff of this, because this is a planning problem where you go from actually thinking you need one player, then a year later you're thinking, no, we need 3 or 4. So then you miss out on this marquee player. That I think Liverpool, we think we probably every 3 or 4 years, we know we're not Chelsea or United or City, but you think every now and again you've just got to go boom, buy the top player, send a message to everyone else,
especially a player,
Virgil van Dijk or a goalkeeper, the best probably young player out there at the moment
who sits there. You know, I've seen it, he's hip to hip with Henderson at England camp. You know, there's some deals going on, I'm telling you.
Everybody in this room wants an owner who's got loads of money. Adam's just mentioned it, I'm not quite sure about state ownership. And you'd have probably been critical on this show, Manchester City or Newcastle, but when it becomes your own club and you're thinking, oh, we can buy anyone, you start, it puts you in a quandary.
Man United would rather have had
a new ownership with more money.
This is what Liverpool have had over the last 5 years in terms of, if the Glazers had done to Man United what FSG have done to Liverpool in the last 5 years, I don't know if you'd be quite as...
No, they did.
..in this position.
But they did, to be fair. Under Sir Alex Ferguson, they were massively successful with the Glazers.
But I'm just talking about the stack it side by side. We're talking about removing the owners
from
the position.
One thing FSG got right was Michael Edwards and that. Like, yeah, exactly. Footballing people, they never had a clown.
You're 10 years further down the line than that, and it might go that way, and that might change the opinion, but Cara's right. You know, they have invested, they built the infrastructure, they put the right people in charge. I would rather us have, more money to spend so we can compete, but... it's a slippery slope, it's a dangerous game. Look at Barcelona trying to keep up with PSG and Man City, who can inflate the markets just basically almost for a laugh, just to kind of put other people almost out of business. look at the state of Barca, because they've chased that and they've had it. Man United have tried to chase it and tried to chase it to keep up with the keep up appearances almost as these with these.
There is a happy middle ground where you have good investment.
We've still
got Arthur. You've still got Milner and Henderson running about.
Oh no! Listen. Nobody sat here saying that Liverpool got it right this season.
So that's pointsism in terms of a plan. That's not just on FSG. That's on a planet. That's down to Jurgen Klopp put a bid in for the lad who went to Real Madrid. He was about 60, 70 million. So there was money there to spend on a midfield player. He didn't get him. He goes to Real Madrid. So Liverpool then chose.
It was almost like too much.
They chose to rebuild the attack. They've just spent basically £200 million
So Jurgen Klopp onto the midfield player last summer. He could have bought someone for 60, 70 million. They actually decided to wait for Bellingham and then haven't gone through with it.
There's going to be an argument that could go on forever. I talk about ownership. I know Gary's, he could speak for hours on it. Cara obviously as well. One club that's very, very happy with their ownership is Newcastle. Ken, everything seems to be going swimmingly well over.
I didn't know what you said. Everything's obviously pretty good at the moment. I'm saying pretty good. That's a little bit of an understatement, I think. To be third in the league from last season, where we were 20th in the league at Christmas last season, this season's just been elite. I don't really have a negative to say about this season, really, and everyone on about their owners and stuff. I understand, because we were there for so long. Like, we were literally there for 15 years. We were, like, really unhappy with our owners as well. But obviously now we are a club that obviously kind of following, I would guess, the Man City sort of way, where we've got a good investment, we've got good owners, and we've got people who actually know what they're doing at the club. So, yeah, it's nice to see, really, for the first time.
And Ben from Brighton, I feel like Brighton is like a model of how pretty much any club 100%. Should be run.
It's very rare when you have a fan that is the owner of the club, which is incredible. That's the main difference between all these failing clubs below me. But no, you know, he's invested so well in the facilities, the structure, and he's a massive fan, and he's a great businessman as well. So we're very, very happy with him, and we've had such a brilliant season under him.
It's interesting when you look at Brighton, and it's the same way in which we look at Jack Walker at Blackburn. Because he was a fan, he was from the town, you accept the fact that he will put in massive money. I think he's put in something like £400-500 million of his own money as a loan into the club, which if that was, an international owner, that would be heavily criticised, you know, because ultimately... But because he's a fan of the club, they've got the perfect scenario, Brighton, but let's be clear what they've put in. The owners put in huge money.
They've also proved that they can make money through recruitment.
But to be clear, look at the debt that he's got on the club.
It's not just players though. Like, a lot of these owners come in, they buy loads of players. The facilities, we've got state of the art training ground, unbelievable U-team. That's where the money's gone in the stadium
loan
as well.
I think there's a loan of between £300-500 million. I don't know the exact. It's a big difference that, but I know it's a huge amount of money that he's had to put in to get there. But I think it's absolutely brilliant what Brighton do with the recruitment and everything that they bring forward. But my concern is that all they need is one bad recruitment season and they end up in the bottom again and they go down and then they lose that revenue. So there is always that worry when there is that level of money that's gone in, particularly obviously for some.
But that will happen eventually, and that's trying to, I think what Brighton, the football they played, and the manager's amazing, some great players. But that was Southampton 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That was, you know, Everton under David Moyes, that thing of buy cheap, sell high, and bringing that money in and keep doing. But when I say it's not sustainable, it's not a criticism. It's just like we all know as football fans, it's hard to keep getting those gems.
We got ripped apart by Chelsea and we're still doing well. So we've already gone through one bad bit, but we've come out on top and we're even better. So thank you for that, for getting rid of it. You know, you can take away all of our staff and that, but you can't take away Tony Bloom, and that's football fans.
Well, we took Potter and then you beat us 4-1. I was there.
And it was beautiful.
It was a great day.
It was poetic. That's football poetry.
From the best run clubs to maybe not the best run clubs, we've got to talk about the bottom of the table. We're going to play a little game. We're going to give each fan of a club in the danger zone 30 seconds, okay, to give us, to basically tell us why you're able to stay in the league.
Ooh. And the best one gets to come on next season when you're
Does that include Chelsea? Or?
It's actually true. We're only 10 points away from relegation. It could happen.
3 points up, Bournemouth.
Right, let's stop it. We've not got a huge amount of time left, so let's start with Ryan from Leeds.
So while Leeds can stay in the league, I'm not too sure, to be honest with you, because we're absolutely pants at the moment. If the owners sort something out, the director of football maybe goes, and there's a big buzz. And player Willy Nonto is our best player, one of our best players. He's got to play games. Javi Garcia's come in and steadied the ship, but then that ship's capsized now. So it's just difficult to know what's going on. But some of the best players in the team are not actually in the squad, are not playing in the starting 11. So if they play them players, there's a chance we might stay up.
Gary Carra, you've been convinced or not?
I was initially when he came in, because I think he was a manager, and you think of the job he did at Watford was really good. He came in initially, as he just said, steadied the ship. But I think what's happened of late is really worrying. When teams start conceding goals, and lots of goals, and I just felt that Leicester game at home was a game they had to win, when you see the fixtures that they've got coming. But what they've got at the moment is, I think, probably a 2 or 3 point gap between themselves and the bottom three. And the way the teams are playing down there at the moment, that could be a decent gap.
I don't have Leeds going down at the moment. I they're in big trouble, but I don't have them going down. I get them just hanging on.
Okay. Next, we're going to go to Greg from Forest. Go on, state your case.
Yeah, well, I know you all think we're going to go down, and I think that works in our favour. Our home form is still key. I know we've only just won our first game in 11, but we've got the tough running, and the tough running is what we like. We've got points against Man City, Chelsea, beat Liverpool, obviously. And that, I think that's what we need. The fans are together, the players are together, and the manager, we've stuck with him. So we are going to stay up.
I hope you stay up, but I think they're going to go down.
I think they'll go down.
I thought from January, I thought they would be in trouble. I mean, that's when you were at 10 points.
I mean, the last two games, Liverpool away, we gave a good account of ourselves. I know 19% possession, but scoring goals, 19. We're finally doing.
Yeah. Was it?
Good account. 19% possession, but lots of shots on target. And we gave them a running. We got worried. We've just beat Brighton. Brighton are the second best away team this season in the league. We've just beat them.
That was a great result.
So, I mean, I think Johnson and Gibbs White are the two. When I think of Forest playing, I think when you go to a game, you're thinking, they could. I know they haven't scored a lot of goals this season for us, but I do always get that feeling they could do something. They've got something about them.
And then we've got Danilo as well, young Danilo. He's just been superb the last couple of games. And I feel like we've got these little gems that people aren't recognising yet, and that could be the key for us. So I'm confident. The fans are confident again. You should have heard us after the game on Wednesday, so I feel like we're back now.
19% possession. Going mad in the boozer. Jordan, the Leicester fan, go give us your 30 seconds of why you should stay up.
I mean, I'm not sure we'll stay up either, to be honest. But obviously, you know, Brendan's not there anymore. We've got Super Dean, Shaky, and JT's come in defensively. We've been all over the shop, but finally realised Danny Ward's not a Premier League goalkeeper, and Everson's looked decent. Soyuncu's come in from out the cold, even though he's going to Atletico in the summer. We score a lot of goals. Tielemans has been injured all season, but he's back. Madison's been pretty poor recently, but he's still a top quality player, and he's going to be playing in the top six next season. Barnes is a danger man, and Vardy finally scored in the Premier League. His only second goal of the season at Elland Road. So hopefully there's a cameo there from JV, but I'm not confident either, to be honest. We've got a reasonably decent run in, and I think we need 7 or 8 points, but it's going to be a tough ask.
I think Leicester will stay up. Oh. Yeah, I think
he thinks everyone's staying up. Yeah, but I said, who's going down?
I've got Southampton Forest down so far.
Okay.
Who else?
We've not got to them yet.
Right, well, that brings me on nicely, Baz. Yeah, but Van, you got 30 seconds. Could you manage to
get
through?
What have I got to do in 30 seconds?
you got to convince us that all the reasons why Everton are going to stay up.
Okay, well, it's done then. I can't. It's the reality. I can't convince you, because I can't convince myself we're going to stay up. Listening to people talk about ownership, and yeah, we've been the worst case of it. We've had a fella come in, blow money everywhere. We've got a board that doesn't come to the games. It's ironic, sitting there last night with 10 minutes left and people have gone. I'm looking at where I sit, right on the halfway line, opposite the director's box, and the people responsible for the mess, aren't they? And we've got a manager that, listening to you saying, like, play the right players. Got an international right-back, not playing, but we're playing the centre-half. We've got a centre-half who's scared of his own shadow. He's playing in Michael Keane. I just don't know where the hope is.
I don't know whether we played rock, paper, scissors, because none of us think we're staying up.
If you beat us on Monday, then I think we'll go.
Maybe it's your hoodie bars, you know, a bit magic.
Yeah. That's in the 60s, man. Put it on today when it says Everton and Magic, but they're far from Magic. I wish Harry Potter had signed, but it is what it is, mate. We're in a huge, huge mess. We had a little bump when Sean Dyche come in. We've won 1 in 10. Frank Lampard was getting hammered for a similar thing. It's not always the manager, because you keep throwing... I heard you before saying clubs, Chelsea, the minute they're bored with the manager, they throw... Everton have done that consistently. But 2 years ago, we had Carlo Ancelotti and we were fourth in March. And 2 years later, if we can get him back for 5 games, we might stay up. That could be my only defence.
And how big would it be for a club like Everton to go down? Never been down in their history.
Massive. I think it is. And I think last season I was on Sky talking about, you know, this and who's the biggest club to go down and then, you know, what that creates on social media. But I think when you think of Everton's history, the fact they've, I think along with Arsenal being in the league longer than anybody, you know, the history they've got in terms of the trophies and the titles.
Only three teams have won the league more than Everton.
Well, I mean, that tells you how big a thing it would be. And it was interesting yesterday, when you played, obviously lost to Newcastle. And I actually put a question out on social media. If you're a Liverpool fan, you know, Newcastle losing gives you more chance of maybe getting an outside chance of the Champions League, or Everton losing, and obviously more chance of them then going down. And the majority of Liverpool fans wanted Everton, Newcastle to win the game, which I thought, because in my head, I'm thinking last night, Newcastle to drop a few points, Liverpool can get closer. But it does feel huge in the city. Right now with sort of, you know, the split Everton and Liverpool fans. And listen, they're delighted when we lose your Champions League final, yeah. So there's no problem with Liverpool fans enjoying it.
Bit of a difference, like, you know.
No, but what I'm saying is every supporter loves the fact that, the rivals don't. But I've always felt when you're down at the bottom, it's probably more... Should you be a team who are trying to score goals but you might concede, or do you try and keep it tight and you might not score? Because the reason you're down there is you can't do both. So I thought Sean Dyche was a great appointment. The big worry is even Sean Dyche's team has now started conceding goals, because Everton are never going to score goals and Sean Dyche is not going to change that. He's not. So the only thing he could do is make them better and tougher to beat than what the Frank Lampard team was. And he'd done that initially. But when you think of like what happened last night, and there's been other
lately,
games, you know, the Fulham game, the last two home games, you can see what, seven goals.
Well, Everton are in the bottom three for defensive metrics since he come in.
Well, that tells you all you need.
How
to
can
know.
He be worse than what Frank got?
Last year, obviously, they stayed up, skin of the teeth. I think this year they're going to go down. I think Southampton, Forest, and Everton are going to go down.
There's a different atmosphere for Everton. Just from the not quite the outside perspective, but. There was a real passion in you at the end of last season. It was coach greetings and seeing the team off from Finch Farm. And you kind of did that last night. But it feels a bit like, we'll do it.
The thing about it was last night, for half an hour.
Against it this time, I think you're almost, it feels like there's an acceptance. I see these guys on an almost daily basis and they're just, it's an acceptance. And I think that's across the Everton fan base. It's almost like, come on. You know, we're talking about the championship, not like how are we going to get ourselves out of this mess.
I've just got, last night, for half an hour, the better side. Comfortably. Newcastle, to me, looked like we've got a bit of room in the tank if we don't win this one. Newcastle scored, Everton had a goal disallowed, fraction.
Yeah.
The Champions League AI they've been given, I think, because it was that them lines, then he bend it. But once Newcastle scored the second, he took the game away.
How big, Baz, do you think Monday night is? Because I look at your fixtures, and you've got a decent last game of the season. The big worry is it might be gone by then. You've got Bournemouth at home. But after Leicester on Monday, which is going to be a tough game, you've then got
Brighton
away, Man City at home. I think if you lose it to Leicester, I can see you get maybe 1 point out the next two games at best. I mean, how big do you think Monday night is in terms of Everton staying up? Because if you win that, you probably go at the bottom three. If you lose it, do you think you're virtually done?
Probably 5 points adrift then, though. But it's a huge, it's a huge game. I said when I was honest at the start of the season, if we keep Calvert-Lewin fit, we might be all right this season. I've said it before, I walked out the studio, got in the car, he was out for 8 weeks.
Jesus Christ.
I've just got one question. Do you do any of these for the EFL? Because otherwise, I'm not going to see you for the year.
We'll invite you anyway, don't worry. Listen, we're running out of time. We've had your bottom three predictions. Cara, give me your bottom three predictions, please.
I'm going to go with Southampton. I'm going to go with Forest. And I think I'm just going to go with Leeds. I don't know why, really, because I've just made an argument for it being really tough for Everton, but I just think
I just can't envisage Everton not being in the Premier League. And I just think they might get a result from somewhere that you don't expect. And I'm going to go for Leeds.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. Big round of applause for both Jamie Carragher and, of course, Gary Neville. And we'll be back at the end of the season to discuss it all again. Appreciate it.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.